Tacoma Radio, and we're about to start our special, and it's climate special. It's called Climate Seasons, and it's a discussion of global climate change with Julie Hantman and selected experts and guests. Today's theme is climate change from trauma to action. We have on the other side of a very beautiful tune by Dinah Washington.
This bitter earth, well, what the fruit it bears, what good is love, that no one shares.
Our guest is internationally renowned psychologist, Renee Blurtzman, and she's on the air here. Do you want to say hello?
Absolutely. Hello. Renee, can you join us?
Hi, happy to be here.
Good morning.
So happy to have you. The show is Climate Seasons, where we talk about climate change impacts and solutions here in the Tacoma Park and D.C. area and beyond. You know, before I get into it, you live in California, so I need to ask you, what is it like right now for you and your community?
Well, right now, I'm looking out the window and there's very little visibility. We've been living with very thick, intense smoke for a number of days. There's numerous massive wildfires happening concurrently all around across the state, California, and the Bay Area. There's been major fires in virtually every county. And so it's no longer just one part of the Bay that's impacted. It's a very surreal moment where friends and colleagues who, you know, in the South Bay, the East Bay, up north where I am, south, are just profoundly impacted. Evacuations, people I know have lost homes. It's a very intense and I would say heightened moment right now for everyone. Every event feels like a unique event. There's been fires happening in California on the rise for a number of years. There's been drought, so this isn't new. But with every extreme event, it feels new. So I don't know if we ever really fully acclimate to what's happening. For a lot of people right now, I've heard people say it's just very surreal. For people who've been working on climate change and scientists and advocates and educators to be working on it, it's surreal to live through the direct impact of it. So yeah, there's a quality mm-hmm. about it that's very, mm-hmm. yeah, it's strange.
I was going to say that there's a phrase I remember from some reading Civil War, they called it seeing the elephant, which is like, it's something that you could talk about, but until you've actually seen battle, lived in battle, like, you know, it's just an abstraction. And I can't help but thinking that these fires are something like that, like to have something so deadly, so close, contributes to the trauma.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so that's a really complicated topic and phenomenon, actually, because for those working on the front lines of addressing climate change, there's sort of this expectation and this hope that when things become more directly experienced and are real, then people will wake up. And I've seen this over and over again for decades. It's whether it's in flooding, you know, in Calgary, Canada, where people's homes were literally flooded out. And so people working on climate were like, finally, maybe people will start to connect the dots between what's happening. Same with fire, same with hurricane and so forth. But the thing is, it's not really that straightforward because humans have really uncanny ability to be creative with reality. And then you've got the factor of it's weather. There's still a lot of ambivalence about connecting the dots between what we're experiencing and human-generated climate change.
Renee, we've cut to the heart, thank you, Dan, of this. Not only are people sporadically connecting the dots and then sort of fading back into some kind of apparent apathy, you say people do care. So could you give us a peek into our minds these days? And again, just go deeper into that. How are we dealing with what we see and what we know, oceans warming and ice melting in addition to these sporadic, horrible events?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's really important to reframe the question of whether or not people care about what's happening. That way of thinking has dominated the environmental movement and people working on climate and conservation for a number of years for understandable reasons, but it's psychologically inaccurate. It's really not about whether people care. It's really about how are we coping and managing with very challenging, threatening, distressing information that goes to the core of who we are and how we live, and what connecting the dots can bring up for people depending on who and where we are in the world and our circumstances and our relationship with the industrial practices, the modern contemporary practices that are contributing to such destruction. So from a psychological angle, I'm very interested in how do we come to terms with confronting our complicity, our involvement with behaviors and practices that we are now have been learning for a number of decades are actually harming and destroying life on the planet. And that kind of quickly takes us into the terrain of really looking at what's referred to in the psychological world as defense mechanisms. So how do we defend, how do we manage difficult experiences and information, particularly that bring up conflict and dilemmas and sadness and grief and as well as the desire to solve and repair and make things right again. And one of the things that I've come up with as a way, kind of a shorthand to get us into really looking at what might be going on with people as we confront these issues is what I call the three A's. And by no means is this comprehensive, but the three A's are basically anxiety. So what do these issues bring up as far as the anxieties? And that includes anxiety about contemplating a different way of life, anxiety about what does this mean if we, you know, make the shifts that we actually really need to make, whether it's plastic or how we get around and how we travel and what we consume and all of that, diet and all of that can bring up anxiety. There's ambivalence, which is conflict, where people may feel really torn and conflicted between competing desires and values. So I'm ambivalent. You know, I'm ambivalent about meat consumption, for example. I don't want to be part of the problem. And I actually love animals and I love, you know, cows and all of that. But I there's this other part of me that was raised in a way where it's a way of life and it's actually part of, you know, kind of who I am. So that's an example of where I might have ambivalence and it doesn't mean, oh, I don't care enough. It means that I'm actually wrestling with some really tough choices and decisions. And then the third A is aspiration. And aspiration is, you know, what are we all going towards? What matters to us? This deep human aspiration that we have, that we actually have so much evidence-based research to support. So it's not like we're making this up, you know, but, you know, humans really aspire towards being connected, being part of something bigger, feeling like we're on the winning side of things, mattering, being seen, being valued, feeling that we all have a contribution, that we have agency, that we each have personal impact, that we can make a difference. So every single human being has some fundamental aspirations. And so it's really important that we connect these three A's so that we can see how the anxieties that get brought up from confronting these issues actually can influence the aspirational parts of ourselves. How do we create and foster the conditions that really allow each of us and ourselves as communities, as collectives, as organizations, as broader wholes, how do we create those conditions where we can actually relate and engage with all of those A's so that we can move in the direction of, okay, what do we do now? You know, like getting into that, the creative action piece.
Mm-hmm. And you talked about a double bind. Can you mention how that connects to the triple A's and what that means?
Sure. So the double bind is a concept that was initially created by someone named Gregory Bateson, a systems thinker in the 70s. The double bind is basically when you feel that you know, damned if you do and damned if you don't. And you literally feel like there's no way out, where on the one hand, you know, we're being told we have to change our way of life. We have to change almost everything about what we do and how we live. The double bind as well. But, you know, what about economic viability? What about jobs? What about, you know, all those things that we also need as well? And it can feel like we're in a double bind. And few options we have with a double bind is we either disconnect and disengage and tune out. That's one option. The other option is to go crazy. So, you know, Gregory Bateson literally, you know, came up with this concept in the context of schizophrenia. So he was looking at what are the conditions of schizophrenics, you know, what are their family conditions? And he found that it's not a direct causality, but he found that there's a trend where people who demonstrate schizophrenic traits have had parents who put them in double binds, where you just can't get anything right. It's like you try this, you get punished, you try that, you get punished, you're just stuck. And so as a psyche, you know, you split off and you can kind of go crazy. So I think that that's sort of a useful metaphor for where we are right now in our world and how a lot of us are feeling. I think a lot of us are feeling either struggling to stay engaged or kind of crazy and engaging in a lot of very contradictory, you know, I don't like the word hypocritical because it's very judgy, but, you know, a lot of us are engaging in what could be seen as hypocritical behaviors where, you know, you've got climate activists and scientists flying around the world, or you've got people who care very deeply but are engaging in really damaging practices at the same time. That's kind of a crazy making situation. And the way, yes?
I'm sorry. I was just going to say, is it analogous to like wanting to lose some weight and yet, you know, buying the 3 packs of cookies that are on sale? Would that reflect a double bind of wanting one thing and doing something that might bring about something else in terms of our relationship to the environment? Yeah.
Yeah, I would say yes, that I think that relates to what happens when we're not actually in relationship with our ambivalence.
Uh-huh.
So it comes out in some other way, right? It comes out in buying the cookies. It comes out in I'm going to book that Hawaii trip. You know, I'm going to treat myself, you know, screw it. It comes out in those kinds of ways it's less conscious. Mm-hmm. It's sort of like the unconscious kind of pops up and acts out. And yeah, so okay. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, if you're just tuning in, this is Climate Seasons with Julie Hantman and Renee, who's a research psychologist out in California, talking about this. And is this a good spot for, we'll put in a little tune for a minute? Everybody okay with
that? Absolutely.
Okay.
Let's go to a musical break. And after that, we'll have more from psychologist Renee Lertzman on unpacking those feelings and where to go from there. We're about to hear Freaking Out by Caroline Cole.
They telling me to jump, might get a little higher, telling me to trust, but I'm walking on the wire.
And we just heard a little bit of Caroline Cole, and that was Freaking Out. You're tuned to Tacoma Radio, and this is Climate Seasons with Julie Hantman and our guest, Renee. I'm not going to mangle the last name. So, folks, are you there?
Yes, we're here.
Okay.
And that is Renee. Yeah. Our guest is Renee Lertzman. And, yeah, back with Climate Seasons, talking about trauma to action is what we called it. And, Renee, you've described how people are in a double bind and all worked up with a hornet's nest of feelings. How do people get out of that double bind?
And start to grapple. Right. Well, the first thing is to become aware, thoughtful, and just more cognizant of what's going on. The first step is just simply tuning in, practicing what's called attunement, the idea that one can tune in and really be in touch with one's own experience as well as others' experience. But we start with tuning into ourselves and being able to name and talk about these double binds. It sounds really basic, but it's absolutely critical, and it's the way out. Because when this is unconscious, when we're kind of pushing it away or we're not talking about it, that's exactly when it can surface in all kinds of unproductive ways. So being able to name and talk about it is absolutely essential. The other, you know, the next step on that path is to be able to bring as much compassion and acceptance and empathy towards our own double binds, towards our moment in this time in history, to be able to zoom out, get perspective, get context, to really tap into the bigger story here, which is the human story. It's not a personal individual story. It's not about me, Renee. It's about who we are as humans in our evolution and as we figure out how to be humans on the planet. But I find that a very helpful narrative because it takes away the sort of tendency to get really myopic and focus on me, 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 and my individual choices. It's really about we. It's about what are we doing and how do I, as a person, show up and be part of that bigger story. But the piece around compassion and empathy can't really be emphasized enough. It's really, you know, noticing when we go into a shame, guilt, blame cycle and bringing as much awareness to that. And I think about people, there's so many wise, insightful teachers and resources on precisely this, you know, whether it's the popular Brené Brown, whether it's Tara Brach, who has written and spoken a lot on what she calls radical compassion and radical acceptance. You know, someone like Tara Brach is a Buddhist and a practicing psychotherapist. And any psychotherapist, frankly, knows that in any, you know, in order to make any kind of change and deep change and transformational change, we need to be able to start with that really tough. It's a very tough challenge. You know, it's a challenge, but we need to get to that place of the paradox of accepting where we are in order to move forward. So, you know, that's really the most effective way of kind of navigating the double bind. So, yeah.
Could you give an example of how it might have worked in your life? A story about how this kind of plays out.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the most immediate story for me is the one that I talk about a bit in my TED Talk, where I went through my own time of feeling just incredible anxiety and grief and overwhelm about what I was learning looking at environmental threats and crisis, climate crisis. And the way I found my way through was by working with people in therapy, in communities, with groups where no one was saying, oh, you shouldn't feel that way. You know, there's something wrong with you. You know, you're too sensitive or you're too whatever. In actuality, being around people, and I really learned this from psychotherapists, to just say, you know what, like what I'm feeling makes sense. It's okay that I'm feeling overwhelmed and anxious. It totally makes sense. That is what allowed me to figure out what I wanted to do in response to what I was feeling. So once I kind of got out of my own way with, oh, what's wrong with me? I should be more positive. I should be more solutions oriented. You know, once I actually was like, you know what I'm feeling makes sense, then I was able to move into more of a, what do I want to do with this? And how do I want to channel these feelings? And then I was able to make really big changes in my life, particularly with what I do professionally. You know, I made a sort of whole redirect, and I was going to become a therapist, and I actually decided, no, I'm not going to go down that path. I'm going to actually really look at how can we, you know, how can organizations do better, you know, be more effective at addressing these issues. So that's an example. There's many examples of, you know, I think that each person can perhaps imagine a moment in your life, you know, where you, a key moment of change, a key moment of transformation, when you were able to just be with yourself and relate with yourself in a way where you were giving yourself permission to feel what you're feeling, and then see what happens, see what changes as a result of that.
And we're listening to Tacoma Radio. This is WOWD.
Yeah, this is Julie, and I feel that that resounds with me that you're navigating the double bind. I've never gotten out of it. My little story, if I'll be brief, but my story was hearing a very impassioned speech by Bill McKibben, who's a leader in the climate action, that really woke me up. I had a child who was only one at the time, and I said, what is her future going to be? And I desperately found ways to get involved, which I did. But I still don't talk to friends and family in any real way about climate change. That's why I'm on the air here. The listeners are my family, you know? I go broad instead of my circles, because there's a dissonance. Everything seems fine here, and we look at the TV and the flooding in Louisiana, and we have compassion, but it sounds like, Renee, we need to get to a place where we embrace, is that right, the other people's experience and feel a part of other people's, and we're all in this together type of thing.
Right, exactly. I mean, the thing is that there's no way around our ability to extend compassion and empathy towards others without extending it towards ourselves. You know, how we relate with ourselves is often mirrored and reflected in how we relate with others. The thing that's really tough about this whole space and people who are concerned about these issues, which I would say is most humans, is that it's very hard not to be triggered and so just angry and full of rage and frustration towards inaction, towards denial, towards people just being slow, checked out. That's, I think, the hardest part. Is how do you attune with that? You know, how do you relate with that? And I see that that's really essential for the way. It doesn't mean that we're not angry, that there's not a place for being angry and confrontational and directive and fighting. So I'm not suggesting that at all. You know, what I'm suggesting is that we bring an attitude to our work of, these are really complicated issues. How can I better understand what's going on for the others? You know, how can I really bring that intention of understanding, sort of like that phrase I've heard recently about seeking to understand the other first before our need to be understood. right? Because we all want to be understood. We all want to have our experience related to. A lot of the polarization in the climate space is directly related to people feeling that they're not understood, that they're being patronized. You know, I've spent years interviewing people from all around the world about climate, including conservatives, climate, quote, climate skeptic Republicans, people in Asia, people in Europe. I've literally talked to so many people. And so I feel I'm on good ground to say that a lot of people who are resistant and feeling polarized around climate change, underlying that is a profound sense of, you know, I'm not part of the conversation. I'm not respected. I'm being patronized. You don't get what I'm concerned about. And so if we want to really, you know, have get the attraction on these issues, we're going to have to bring in a whole new level of emotional intelligence and kind of internal capacities and the ability to tune in. This is why I think attunement is such a powerful frame for the work we're doing on climate.
Yeah. And you've talked about how people not only feel rejected, but that they themselves are grappling with apprehending what acting on climate will do to their way of life, and to understand that privilege may have to be downgraded somewhat. Is that right?
Exactly. That's exactly right. So if we dial into that, if we dial into what is this person or group or community feeling threatened by, you know, what is feeling at risk? What are the losses that people are either anxious about or anticipating or are real? Because, you know, it's inevitable.
I'm Julie Hantman with Climate Seasons, talking with psychologist Renee Lertzman and with our co-host Danny Griffin on Tacoma Radio, WOWDLP 94.3 FM in Tacoma Park, Maryland. Check out my prior episodes at climateseasons.org. That's all one word, climateseasons.org. And a quick plug to go find a pencil, because later I'll share Renee's websites for you to check out. And let's go to a musical break. And after that, we'll find some ways to help people do this hard work and learn from Renee what's going on the ground.
Just keep on multiplying, but you're so busy changing the world. Just one smile and you could change all of mine. We share the same soul. Oh, 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 oh. We share the same soul. Oh, 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 oh. We share the same soul.
That was a little Jack Johnson. You're listening to Tacoma Radio, and this is Climate Seasons with Julie Hantman and our guest, psychologist Renee Lertzman, and we're back on the air.
Thank you, Danny. Renee, we're a little short on time, but I want to hear you talk about what is happening on the ground, whether here or around the world, to help people do that tough work of looking at their feelings and moving through them and getting through that double bind enough so that they can get into action.
Mm-hmm. Well, what's really cool that's happening right now is that there's a lot of initiatives and efforts that bring in space and opportunity for people to talk about and share how they're feeling about these issues, and seeing that as just part of the work that we do. I'm thinking about organizations like Citizens Climate Lobby. I've noticed that some of the big national organizations that have chapters, Sierra Club and the Nature Conservancy and a number of those kinds of groups, are starting to have more programming and opportunities for people to just connect, you know, to talk in a group environment about, you know, the very real psychological, emotional impact of what's happening. We've got initiatives such as the Climate Psychology Alliance that started in the UK and now has a North America branch. There's something called the Good Grief Network, which is a small group format where people can get together and go through a process where everyone can support each other. And then there's the project that I've been starting, which is called Project Inside Out. Project Inside Out, it's intended to support organizations, actually, who are working to advance action on climate change and sustainability. And, you know, one of the things that we've created with Project Inside Out that might be of interest to the listeners is we have these five guiding principles that were created after a lot of time working in collaboration with climate activists and psychologists who've been looking at the intersection of climate and psychology for some time. And I want to do a shout out to Kristen Barker, who is in the DC area, who heads up One Earth Sangha. For those who are interested in a more Buddhist orientation, she's got this amazing training that she developed, and she was part of a partnership with Project Inside Out and doing some piloting and testing out some new ways of working. But the five guiding principles are basically, what can we do as individuals and as organizations to bring in more of the things we've been talking about? I can just run through what those five are really briefly. The first guiding principle is attune, and that's really about tuning in to both ourselves and others. The second guiding principle is what we call reveal. And reveal is about, how do we talk about this stuff? You know, how do we tell the story? How do we communicate? And the premise of reveal is about being compassionate truth tellers. It's not about whether to talk about what's going on. It's how to do it in a compassionate and emotionally intelligent way. The third is what we call equip, which is about really skilling ourselves up. And that includes working with psychologists and partnering with people in the mental health profession, community. You know, there's so much wisdom in Indigenous community work as well, you know, which has to do with how to hold councils and how to create participatory practices where everyone's included and engaged with. And then the fourth guiding principle is what we call convene, which is getting together in groups, really emphasizing this isn't about me as an individual kind of sitting alone at home. This is really about joining forces with groups and organizations that resonate with you. And then the final one is sustain, which is really thinking about, well, how do I sustain myself for the long haul? And how do we keep ourselves resilient?
Climate science experts are saying time is fast running out for really making change. Psychology, you could say, in the scheme of things, is a soft solution. We're not building solar arrays or knocking on doors or forcing policy change. We're engaging in this soft and maybe time-taking process. It might take some time to go through these things. What is psychology's role, really, right now?
Well, I would say that actually you can't really make traction on any of those things without bringing a psychological nuance and skill set. So knocking on doors, you know, getting people, getting stakeholders to fund and approve of major solar projects. Any action, any solution we're talking about involves humans, which means it involves psychology. It's bringing in a level of emotional intelligence, which means how do we communicate and engage and take action that is fully cognizant of the psychological terrain we find ourselves in, which is that it's triggering, it's activating, it's scary, it's overwhelming. It's all those things that can unfortunately lead people to act against their own best interest. So what I'm talking about is how do we draw on the best from the psychological field, just like we do with policy, technology, economics, sociology. This is just about recognizing that actually action on climate requires that we bring ourselves up a level and think about how, you know, we can do what we do better and more effectively in light of what we know about the psychological impact. So That's my response to this is too slow and this is too soft and we need to take action. I think through partnering with psychologists is a very, very powerful way forward. Mm-hmm. It's not that psychology has all the answers. It's just one sort of stream. But I think it's a really vital role to play in this work. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
It does.
Renee, can I ask you a question? You alluded to something earlier. Remind me a little bit of the prayer of St. Francis, which is seek first to understand rather than be understood. And I was wondering, any tips about engaging others that may be skeptical or dismissive of this that doesn't tend to just sort of like come to a dead stop?
Mm-hmm. Well, yes. I think a lot about the work in motivational interviewing. How do we approach our conversations and interactions from the spirit of inquiry and curiosity and guiding? And so I would advise to one, you know, it's like staying in touch with yourself and your own triggers is part of the picture, but being able to engage with that spirit of where are your anxieties, where's your ambivalence, and where's your aspiration, and really asking for clarification and seeking to understand and assuring the other person that we're not going to judge them. I'm not going to judge you. You know, I'm not going to tell you what to do, to say, well, actually, I just help me understand. You know, I really want to just understand where you're coming from. Is really goes a long way and is very disarming. And then people can feel like they don't have to be on the defense so much. But, you know, it's really coming back again and again to taking that high road of help me understand. And the other thing is coming with that spirit of recognizing everyone has their own autonomy, their own dignity, their own integrity, you know, bringing that in and remembering that, you know, we're all kind of doing our best here.
And then did you do a pivot to persuasion in that process to try to convince?
I advise strongly against persuasion and convincing. Every talk I give, I say, we've got to stop persuading, convincing, cajoling, cheerleading, because that's exactly what leads people into resistance. You know, no one wants to be persuaded or convinced. No one. But guiding is a reframe where we actually do have information to offer. And we do need to shift. We do need to get change, behavior change happening. But through the spirit of guiding, it's evoking and enlisting the other to be a partner in that. And it's a very different mindset than I need to convince you. You know, if I came on this show with the intention, an agenda of convincing you all to see my perspective, I think it would be a very different dynamic and we wouldn't be having a conversation. You know, I would continue to keep bringing it back and I would say, but do you all... You know, I'd be relating to you in a very different way. And I would argue convincing and persuading is one type of relating and it's not true relating, right? Because I'm not listening. I'm just focused on trying to get you to change.
One last question, Renee, in your day-to-day work, do you feel like there's a brass ring? You do so much every day working toward critical mass for a tipping point in terms of really pushing political leadership and journalists and others to take this crisis seriously on a day-to-day basis.
Yes, we need mass engagement without question. The best way to get that is by having different kinds of conversations. And that can be conversations that we have directly. Conversations can also be in the media. Conversations can be policy. Conversation can be what a politician gets up and says when they're talking mm-hmm. about climate change. It's a way of changing the conversation so that we're able to say, look, here we are. This is really painful. This is difficult. No single person has the answer, but we together can figure this out and we're all needed right now. So it's that invitation into a broader collective, you know, story really that I think is the way forward.
I want to thank you, Renee Lertzman, for joining us and co-host Danny Griffin. Thanks as well. Again, check out Renee's work, and that's at reneelertzman.com. That's reneelertzman.com. And also projectinsideout.net. And catch prior episodes of this show at climateseasons.org.
Seen minutes turn to hours, hours turn to years. I've seen truth.
ton of power. If you could see me the way I see you, if you could feel me the way I feel you, you'd be a believer, you'd be a believer. And it's turned to hours, hours turned to years, and I've seen truth turn to power.